Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. And tonight we have a special guest, and her name is Patricia Brooks. She's going to be talking about animal totems, and her totem is the owl. Mine is the otter. And oh, pretty noisy, huh?
How many otters are there? Sounds like your whole family tree there.
And then we've got Mark the Badger Borcherding, and since we're talking about animal totems tonight, I told Patricia we were going to have lots of sound effects. We've got bears and bats and deer, chipmunks and chickadees and butterflies and hummingbirds but what we like to do first is we like to give our guests a little bit of insight into to why they're doing what they're doing, and it sometimes it's a real surprise, sometimes it isn't. But Mark, go ahead and tell her why she's on the path she's on.
Well, I'm not sure it'll go that far, but we'll give maybe some insights.
Work your magic.
So we'll look up your birth. And this is going to be according to a traditional Mayan day count in the Zulcan. And you were born on a day called 11 Manik. And it's composed of the numbers 11 in the Manik glyph. And the number 11 has to do a lot with, indicates maybe some possible psychic or more than unusual mental abilities. Also probably have an ability to help in with knowledge, particularly transmutation or changing from one knowledge realm to another realm. For example, maybe in your case, from animals to humans. and the Manique Glyph. So that's the things related to that number 11. The Manique Glyph itself looks like a kind of a hand. If you put your thumb and your first finger together and kind of the rest of them forming a circle, that would sort of be what a Manique Glyph looks like. In animal energy, it would relate to a deer. It was considered one of their interesting, powerful days for the Mayan daykeepers, for the Deer Day or the Manique Day. And it has a lot of energy and power of forest, especially. So you might find that you'd like to be in forest and gain a lot of insight and energy and power from that. Okay.
Wow. You know, that's, Mark, that's incredibly fascinating. The I do love the forest.
Well, hold on a second, because I'm going to give you another one, too.
Oh, okay.
Can you, well, now this one I'm going to give you is a little bit more, is expanded. And it is using a expanded Zulcan that's actually larger than the current Mayan Zulcan. And it's going to give you three different aspects. One, kind of going forward in time from your birth, from our world cycle to the next. The other, time flow coming backwards in time from the world cycle into our cycle. And then where these two combine or form kind of a zero or balancing point. So we'll go over those real quick, too. Your one going forwards in time has energy associated with dreaming, intuition, especially when it has to do with abundance and opening up new pathways. A lot of aspects to the power of truth, using truth. So that's truth, dreaming, intuition, all these things working together. Connecting to things about supernatural power and ancestors, especially. That's kind of a secondary support energies coming in. It's on a glyph that relates to the underworld, caves, bats, since they're in caves, right? And you, I think you wrote about those recently on your birthday,
right,
about the bat.
Absolutely.
So that would connect in with that for you. On the other side, coming backwards in time, you have something that would relate to a glyph that relates to the owl. And it has to do with inquiring, being fearless, using wisdom, for especially when it relates to reason and justice, things that have to do with reason and justice and equality, keeping things balanced, equal, things working together, right? Stuff like that. And its partner energy, in order to do that, is things that have to do with art and creating things, artistic stuff. So then these two come together in that center point, which it has to do with things about change, synchronicity, movement, and thought. A lot of energy here about service, doing things in service to others and such. And things about some things about water here, moon energy, thankfulness, being thankful, stuff like that is kind of the partner energy into the service and the thought and synchronicity. And that's kind of your energy of moving from one world to the next, things that have to do with that, between like the cave and the bat and the owl. So you have bat cave energy on one side and owl energy on the other side, and they're moving into basically movement and movement of things type of energy, flow and movement and thought, consciousness.
Wow.
Especially when that consciousness has to do with universality or universalizing things, you know, pulling things together. Okay.
Oh my goodness, that's absolutely incredible. Actually, the well, you mentioned, you know, the bats have been very persistent. You know, I just wrote about them. They've been very persistent. The owl is my life totem, And you know what struck me in the, I mean, it's like you just read my life. Just a couple months ago, I had an experience. You know, I believe it was a psychic experience, but I was given the word transmutation, and I had a whole, you know, experience with the word transmutation, and I wasn't really familiar with that word prior to that in that context before, and that seems to be kind of a theme, you know, since that time moving forward. So it's really interesting that you brought that up also, moving from, you know, one knowledge realm to the next. And this had to do with transmuting, you know, negative energy into positive energy. So it's that's incredible. Wow. Thank you so much. I mean.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It's all about all about the Thunder People, because they watch over us, they know what we're doing, and they have a lot of influence over us. So you think that's pretty accurate, huh?
I think it's incredibly accurate, actually. And you know, when Mark was talking about the about truth being important, you know, the connecting to your ancestors, but when he was talking as far as how truth and balance and justice, I mean, that absolutely, you know, is incredibly important to me. Everything that he mentioned, I just was just smiling. I'm just smiling ear to ear. What an incredible gift. Thank you so very much for that. I'm going to spend a lot of time reflecting on this for sure.
Well, I've often said that if he wasn't in full control of his faculty, I would say he was the Rain Man of the Mayan calendar, because he sure but he's smart and he knows how to do other things other than count stuff, you know. it took me a while to understand, you know, what he was talking about. I've told the other guests it took, you know, well over a year for me to figure out what the heck he was talking about. And I was privileged to, one of my oldest friends is Robert Three Eagles, and way before anybody knew who Don Carlos Barrios was, he had read his book on Mayan astrology, which was only published in Spanish, and understood it and introduced me to my Mayan day sign, which is 9-Eek. And that's just, you know, unfolded a lot of things in my life. And I think the more you get into it, the more you'll begin to understand yourself and what your life's mission. Hey, you know, believe it or not, we've got a caller. Let me see if they're just listening or if they have a question. Hi, caller from area code 805. Are you just listening or do you have a question for Patricia?
Oh, I didn't know if we were going to be given messages from the animals.
Well, that's what she's here to talk about.
Okay, I didn't know if she was going to be giving messages.
you mean like channeling or something? Or?
Well, no, I don't know how she works, like as far as the animals, you know, that
come
up and then they give you messages.
Well, did you have any particular question in mind for her?
Well, I did want to know, you know, if the animals saw me. I have a friend back east. He's 90, and he's called me and has mentioned me coming out there and staying with him, or him moving to California. He's on the East Coast. So I wanted to know if anything came up with any of that, if she, you know, had an idea what would be best.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Patricia. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Patricia.
I can't give you a specific message, you know, regarding the animals with that. What I could do is if you had a question regarding animal symbolism, because what we're going to be talking about is animal totems and the symbolism.
Okay, well,
when animals
I did have a dream, and They called number 9, and that was me. And then I won an elephant.
Oh.
And it was... And then I don't know what happened. I mean, somebody gave me this elephant, and I gave it away. It's like, oh, no, I can't, you know, I have to give it away, and, you know.
Oh, that's really interesting. I bet there's a bunch of, you know, dream symbolism in there also. Well, the number 9 we know is, you know, has to do with healing and has to do with understanding. So the symbolism of the number 9 has to do with that. And the elephant, very specifically, you know, is actually considered very sacred. I'm just trying to see if there, you know, something's coming through that's specific with the elephant for you. It says, you know, if you're working with the elephant totem, you know, with the long trunk, let me back up for a second. If you're working with animal symbolism or animal totems, it's very important that you study the behaviors and characteristics of the animals because they're symbolic of their message. And something that's very, very symbolic of the elephant is obviously his very long trunk and his sense of smell. So one of the things when you're working with elephant medicine has to do with maybe incense or fragrant oils or healing through aromatherapy type. So the 9 with the elephant may be significant of that. Does
well,
that
they're
have
very,
any... His,
they're very oh. family-oriented.
Yes.
Probably in the animal kingdom, they're probably more family-oriented than humans are. They have a long memory, and, you know, they symbolize power, strength, faithfulness, and intellect. And but they have a kind of an introverted personality, which may be a reflection of your own personality. Were you riding it, or was it a certain color or anything?
It was brown, but I wasn't riding it because it was given to me as I won.
Okay.
That was my gift.
Well, you know, the color brown has to do with grounding, you know, being very grounded, connected to the earth also. And as Blue Otter said, you know, the elephants are very family oriented. And the number 9 is associated with healing. So if you take all those aspects in the family oriented, the healing, the ancient, you know, kind of wisdom of the elephants, and the symbolism of the trunk and the sense of smell, does that have any meaning to you? Is that meaningful in any way?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't have a family of my own. I didn't get married. I don't have kids. I'm now 60. But I was very connected to my parents' kids. You know, my mother and father had 8 kids. And now I'm very connected to all of them. You know, and it's very important to me to have that connection to the family. Nieces and nephews and, yeah.
So you're in California, and you're wondering whether this relative should move where you are. Whereabouts are you in California?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara, along the coast.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever listened to any of our shows before?
First time.
Okay. Well, you might want to take a look at the front page of prophecykeepers.com and read up about the prophecies of the flooding of the coastal areas that's coming, and that might figure into because we're on that page we connect Hopi prophecy with Catholic prophecy with the Christian prophecy, Catholic mysticism, and a lot of different things coming from a lot of different directions. You might also check out thechoiceseer.com, which also talks about the predicted flooding. And you could listen to our interview with Loria Del Toy.
Is this going to come from the rain or from a tsunami?
Earth changes. The West Coast has been, the entire Western United States has been up and down above water several times. There was a Phoenician seaport just a few miles from what is now Albuquerque, New Mexico, and there are coral heads on top of a mountain 1,000 feet higher in elevation than Las Vegas is now.
Ooh.
So you might want to think about getting up into the mountains and forest.
Yeah.
Up into, let's see, the, let I can't remember, let's see, which interview was it? The interview, I think the last interview we did, I played a 15-minute clip of a NASA employee that talked about being involved with the Hubble project and what he read 50 years ago when he was a kid, and I was a kid in California, I remember it too, and about an outer space object that comes through every once in a while. But the Hopi elders have been saying get out of California for a long, 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 long time. So, but anyway, don't want to get too far off subject,
No, that's interesting. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, we'll let
where was the gentleman or something for that she was trying to connect this animal thing to? I forgot.
East Coast.
No, I was asking a question about my friend on the East Coast. He's 90. Mm-hmm. If he should come to California, or if they saw me going there to help him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a situation. He has people helping him and all, but they're all after his money. And, you know, that's an awful place to be in, you know, to live like that.
Yeah, definitely something elephants wouldn't do, right?
No.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, he just told me about it, and he doesn't like it, no?
Coastal areas are going to be very dangerous places. Cherokees used to travel with Phoenicians. We migrated here across the Eastern Ocean, and we never stayed in coastal areas. We remember many times that we moved up into the mountains. We stayed in certain elevations because we're always afraid of coastal flooding. And the Hopi say that four times the earth has turned over, and in other words, flipped over. And the only thing that could really do that is the passage of a body near the earth that would grab a hold of one pole and actually flip it over. And that's exactly what Pope John Paul said would happen. The third prophecy of Fatima was never officially released, but he did tell a small group of faithful followers in 1985 what was going to happen. And he just said, you know, it's just if we were to tell, you know, the world that millions of people would be swept off of entire continents by sheets of ice or oceans, you know, in a matter of seconds, that's not so much something that to be publicized. So, so I would, you know, I would think about getting away from coasts.
Okay.
And getting him away from coasts also. But
he's in Massachusetts.
Yeah, he's at a low elevation, so you might want to look into it, and there's any number of did you get an email concerning this interview tonight? Is that why you're here on it?
No, I saw you on Blog Talk.
Okay, well if you'll if you'll go to the, later on this evening when I get the link changed, if you go to prophecykeepers.com and click on the link that says click here to listen to the interview, along the right side of the page, you'll down toward the bottom on the right hand side, you'll see a series of three small maps. And if you click on those maps, it'll give you some information about what Edgar Cayce saw and what Laurie Del Toy and a whole bunch of people have seen regarding the flooding that's going to come. So
is that going to happen soon?
The elders say, you know, we've got about 3 years until things really. I was told in 1977 that 16 would be something significant, and Daniel's timeline points toward the 2016-2017 period, and so.
And do they point toward California?
Yeah, about the total inundation, turning California into a series of islands. And, the entire Intermountain West is going to be flooded. And this is coming from a lot of different directions. From Mad Bear Anderson told the Mormons they were going to get flooded out in 1972. It's coming from so many different directions. It's just something you'll have to look into. And, but anyway, there's lots of information about it on the website.
Yeah, definitely.
And
I'll check that out. prophecykeepers.com. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I'll change that link, and you'll be able to go to the page. And we'll let Patricia get back to her subject matter.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Hey, bye bye now. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to take off.
I thought it was very interesting.
Anyways, yeah, I didn't mean to get so far afield, but we were talking about animals. But sometimes the spirit takes you in different places.
Absolutely.
I think it might be something might be interesting. Go back to what Patricia was covering recently with her birthday and the bat, and maybe you can go over that a little bit.
Well, the bat has been a very persistent totem for me. It's been a very persistent message totem. And the symbolism of the bat is one of rebirth or promise after change. It was interesting, Mark, that you mentioned the bats coming from the caves, because that's one of the reasons that they're thought of as being, you know, reborn, because they are reborn from the caves each night. In addition, the bats are great propagators of new growth. You know, they're able to fly across large areas of land that other primates are afraid of at night, and they propagate the plants as they go. So it's really interesting that I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt myself, but do you guys hear all that feedback? Because
I don't hear. Sometimes you'll hear weird things because it's being carried by Skype, but.
I'm hearing some echo. You don't have the player up and playing on the interview, do you?
No, I don't have anything up.
I'm not hearing anything, so the quality of the show is fine. And
I'm just hearing myself twice, so that's okay. So if I sounded funny for a second, but I'll work with it. I think it just went away. So good. Sorry about that. So anyway, so the bat is promise after change. The bat is rebirth, and the symbolism. And the bat was very, very persistent in my life, at a point in my life when my life had kind of gotten, my marriage had gone, you know, very stale. Things, I was kind of making making good enough. Everything was just good enough. You know, I was, my marriage wasn't in a healthy position, but I, you know, it was like I had the house, I had the kids, you know, I had the kind of the whole package, so I thought it was good enough. And the first time the bat visited me was during that part in my life. And I didn't understand the animal symbolism at the time, but if a bat presents itself to you, the woman that just called, it was in a dream state, but all of the animals that presented themselves to me was, you know, physically in person, and the animals need to present themselves in a unique or persistent or repetitive way to be recognized as a message totem. You know, some of the questions to ask yourself are, you know, what's kind of not working for me now? You know, what areas of my life do I need to, you know, let go of? What areas might be dying around me that I'm, you know, not willing to face yet? And, you know, the other symbolism of the bat, which ties into it, at least to me, you know, the bat was, I was very fearful of the bat. You know, many people are very scared of the bat. And, you know, change, you know, rebirth can be very, very scary to people. It was very scary to me. But without some part of your life or, you know, dying in some sense, then it's really hard to have a rebirth. And Mark, you brought up one of the blogs that I just wrote, which had to do with my birthday, and I celebrated the bat in my blog because I was celebrating the rituals. I was celebrating the rituals of our birth. I was celebrating the new beginnings. You know, with the new birth year comes new beginnings, and that ties in directly with the bat. So instead of being fearful of the bat, as I was when I was going through my process and the bats were visiting me, I actually am now celebrating the bat because I understand their, you know, their very positive, you know, life-affirming, life-changing symbolism. So.
Okay, yeah. Sort of fits in with some of the things in the Mayan things about the bats, too, that shows up in their, when their twins are going through the underworld, they have the bats show up there, too.
Right, absolutely. And the bat, yes, the bat is very much tied in, and that's where part of the, you know, the symbolic death, it's, you know, the death is only a symbolic aspect of it to the rebirth with the twins fighting in the cave. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's I use dreammoods.com a lot, and it suggests that you know, rebirth, unrealized potential, you know, letting go of old habits, or might indicate some unknown situation, and that you might be blindly entering into a situation or a deal, and yeah, it doesn't take a whole lot, you know. It's a language. Dreaming is a language you have to learn, and it's actually pretty easy. There's not a whole lot of mystery about it. If you think about bats, and you know, blind as a bat, and the environment that it lives in, and it's pretty easy to figure out what the creator might be trying to tell you, particularly if right after you're waking up, you get an interpretation. So I'm interrupting too much. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, but you know what? It's really, you know, Blue Otter, it's really important. And I guess, you know, we didn't really, you know, go over that too much yet. But like you said, that, you know, most of the animals, they could have multiple meanings, and you could study them in great, you can study them in great depth. Part of it, I think, is our own, you know, intuition, how it relates specifically, you know, to ourselves. But the looking at the behaviors and characteristics of the different animals are symbolic of their message. So, you know, the blind as a bat, you know, is definitely the terminology is symbolic of, you know, something that may not be so obvious. You know, the being born from the caves is symbolic of, you know, the rebirth or the promise, the propagation of the earth. the fertile ground for the new plants to grow, the new growth. So it's and all of the animals, it's the studying of the behaviors and characteristics. And there could be multiple meanings, and that's where, you know, like you said, you know, the interpretation, or, you know, I think it's important to people to have reflection, you know, to really try to listen to their own intuition, you know, try to become more aware of how that feels to them. And, you know, because we already know, right? Don't we already really know what everything is? It's just a matter of being open to it, or aware of it, or, you know, remembering. So, like the bat, very specifically to me, was a rebirthing process. And to someone else, it could have a little bit different take, like the something that, you know, you're not aware of, or is just, you know, coming not as it may seem, going along with the blind as a bat concept. But that's the fun of animal, you know, that's the fun of animal symbolism. You know, that's the connection to nature and the animals, you know, you know, it's really interesting, and it's really fun to study the different animals and to see how they're, you know, the messages they may have, you know, in your life.
Well, you remember that movie Squanto?
No, I don't think I've ever seen that.
It was a Disney movie about, and it's actually a true story. It's about, I think he was a Pequot Indian that was picked up and taken back to England. And he was living at a monastery, and he was on horseback, and he'd been taught from the time he was little that if a hawk swept down in front of your path, that there might be some kind of danger. And so, you know, I was you often wonder about, you know, movies and stuff like that. But let me tell you something that happened to me. I used to live in the, back in 93 and 4, I lived in the same town that James Mooney lives in. And James is a spiritual leader of the Native American church, pretty much worldwide now. Anyway, he taught at the drug rehabilitation at the prison there in Gunnison. And one day I was going to drive from Gunnison to Manti, which is about six miles away. And just as I was passing in front of the prison, a red-tailed hawk flew off of a fence post just to my right. And all of a sudden, a big gust of wind pushed him down almost to the ground, flew right in front of me, and I kind of thought, that's kind of interesting. That's kind of like what I saw in the movie Squanto. And so I was hyper-vigilant for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and nothing happened. And then about 10 minutes later, I get into Manti, and there's no stoplight in Manti, but there is a blinking orange light. And this kid drives right across, didn't look at me, didn't look a bicycle in a crosswalk, which you don't do anyway. And I laid on the horn thinking, you know, he's going to hear me, nearly hit him. And then I realized he never heard me because he was deaf. And so the spirit just kind of said to me, okay, you see now how it works. Now pay attention next time. And you know, if it ever happens again, you know, don't let your guard down so soon. So just because it was in a Disney movie doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And those kind of things don't happen. I'm still trying to figure out why when I came back to Tennessee, I was staying at a friend's house, and up behind their house, there was a sinkhole, and a cave way down the sinkhole. I just went and sat in the woods one day, and about 5 minutes later, a woodchuck just walked. He just walked right up to me, like, I mean, I could have reached out and touched him. And I just thought it was so strange. You know, a wild animal walks up to me. I was just sitting on the floor of the forest with my back to a big log. And then I met my wife, Linda, and, you know, her brother, Chuck, liked me at first, and then he decided he didn't like me, and then he decided he did, and then he decided he didn't. So, you know, maybe that was a warning, you know, watched out for chucks. You never know. You just never know, you know, where things are going to come from. It's just like years ago in a dream, oh, maybe 30 years ago, I was told, watch out for redheads. And I'll tell you, I have had more problems, and my family has had more problems, you know, with people who are redheads than you can possibly imagine. So it really pay attention.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you touched on so many important points, and one of the most important is that, you know, the paying attention, because I believe, and the inviting of the animals, because I believe that, you know, we're all connected. Obviously, you know, we're connected to the natural world. We're connected to the animals. And, you know, the communication can be, we can have communication between us. But if we're not paying attention, you know, then we're going to miss it. But it's important to note, though, that it's not just random animals, you know, that are doing their normal behavior, that the animal needs to be doing something unusual, something out of character, maybe something repetitive. You know, if you see the same animal, let's say, a couple days in a row, you know, something that catches your attention would be symbolic of the animal maybe, you know, communicating, energetically communicating with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, if I'm sitting on my back deck and a bird flies over my head, well, you know, the bird might have flown over 20 people's head. You know, that wouldn't necessarily mean that the bird had a message for me. But for example, one of my friends had a hawk, to speak of a hawk again, come and sit on her back deck post around the same time every day for close to a week, and it would just, you know, sit there and hang out on her back deck, and, you know, then that was pretty repetitive, you know, so then you could, you know, pay attention and then, you know, look inside, go inside, right, you know, see what your intuition, see what your, you know, your spirit is telling you, and if you believe that the hawk has a message for you, if that behavior was repetitive or unique enough that the animal has a message for you, and the hawk, as you touched on, is a messenger. The hawk is considered a visionary. And if we look at the behaviors and characteristics of a hawk, you know, they have keen powers of observation, and they fly during the day. So again, and very generally, but the hawk is thought of as being a visionary, you know, a messenger of things to come. Where the owl, which we've already said is my power animal or my life totem, is the counterpart of the hawk. The owl is, you know, the nighttime version, let's say, of the hawk. And the owl also has very keen powers of observation, eyesight, hearing, etc., but he flies at night. So the symbolism of the owl would be to, you know, more of a clairaudient or clairvoyant nature, where you can maybe see things that aren't as apparent, you know, to you. So it's fascinating. I mean, I find it fascinating that, you know, the studying and the, you know, the studying of the behaviors and the characteristics and their meanings. Is that the owl?
That was a little, I think that was a little pygmy owl. I'll tell you what, I had, when I lived in California years ago, we had pygmy owls, and they had a habit of liking to land right in front of your car, and just sit there. And we had a good friend who, for some unknown reason, you know, drove off the road and got killed, it was posited that he may have been sleepy, and you know, may have looked at that little hawk, that little owl, and you know, his brain may have misinterpreted it, and so he just quickly swerved and ended up going off the side of the road and got himself killed. But owl's a messenger in most cultures. And Rolling Thunder was one of my earliest teachers, you know, going back to the mid-80s. He was, The Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan and all kinds of people, you know, did things around him. And he had, he spoke around the world. But in January of 1997, my wife and I were up at Gunnison, Colorado, in the first week of January, 8,000 feet in the snow, on the ice, trying to do a sweat lodge ceremony. And there was an owl hooting all weekend long, and we knew something was up. And sure enough, we get home, get on the internet the next day, and found out that Rolling Thunder had passed away, you know, over the weekend. And so they don't always mean something or someone's going to die, but they're a harbinger or something's going to happen.
Right. You know, that's interesting that you brought up, you know, the two different situations with the owl that had two people dying, because before I really started studying the owl, you know, that's what I had heard, you know, that if you hear an owl hooting at night, that, you know, that's a message of death or someone's going to die. And I would hear owls a lot, and, you know, that kind of really scared me. You know, I would, you know, I'd be like, oh, no, there's an owl again, and then, you know, I'd get a little superstitious. But it definitely, the owl is not necessarily a, you know, a harbinger of death. You know, it's a messenger, for sure. And like you said, you know, there's many cultures.
Sure.
That have looked to the owl for a messenger. And some of them, you know, again, I think part of that fear comes, you know, somewhat because it's a nocturnal animal, you know, so I think that it might be getting a little bit of a bad rap a little bit because, you know, it's not widely seen, you know, at least, you know, around here, you know, you hear the owls a lot, but you don't necessarily always see the owls, you know, they're in the trees. And so I think that, you know, can make them a little, you know, people a little fear-based of, you know, night different nighttime animals, but the owl definitely is just, it's not solely symbolic of, you know, of a death.
I'll tell you what I did learn about people dying. I've been widowed twice, and before my first wife passed away, I had a dream of an airliner crashing, and I heard a voice say, "There's going to be a disaster." And not long after that, she passed away. And as I started looking into dream interpretation a few years later, and there's a lot of different dream interpretation books. There's a ton of them out there. A lot of them are really, really old. And this is an art that goes back thousands of years. Well, I was reading where a dream of an airline crashing is a dream that someone's going to die. Well, so I married her best friend, you know, shortly after she passed away, and that's kind of a long story too. And,
It sounds like a long story, actually.
But the kicker was my first wife was 8 years older, and the second wife was 12 years older. But I had a dream about a fighter plane, and Betty had was an Army veteran. She was a real fighter. And I dreamed that this fighter plane didn't crash. It didn't go straight into the ground. It skidded through five buildings before it finally came to rest. And that's exactly what happened. She had a stroke. She was in five different either emergency rooms or hospitals or whatever it was. You know, she was in five different buildings before she finally passed away. So, the dream of an airliner crashing. You know, that's something I would pay attention. There's one guy I know of. Actually, he was quite a controversial guy because he befriended and visited the surviving child of the incident at Fatima, Portugal, back in the I guess it was 1918. Was it, Mark? But he. He had an actual, he actually predicted an airliner was going to crash, and it was, and it's a documented prediction that came true.
Not the one in Chicago?
I think his last name was Bishop. It's been a while, and, he's a fellow that went on coast to coast. He told George Noory he was going to reveal some details, and then he went to Portugal and got sworn to secrecy by that last child, and George got mad and threw him off the air. It was quite a scene. Anyway, getting off on a tangent.
But Blue Otter, you know what's interesting? You know, if you talk about dream analysis and you're talking about messages, right? I mean, you're getting messages in your dreams just like the messages, you know, that we get from the animals. You know, I believe that, the messages coming from the animals are basically coming from the divine, you know, that it's,
sure,
it's God or the divine, you know, energetically communicating through the animals, to us. Some people believe that it's, you know, the animal spirit, you know, independently is communicating. I couldn't tell you for sure, you know, just the different belief systems. I believe it's, you know, the divine spirit coming through. But in the dreams and the messages we get in the dreams, do you believe it's the same divine spirit that's working through the dreams? Where do you think the messages are coming?
Well, they're all coming from Creator, and there's several different classes of dreams. Some, very few dreams are prophetic, like the one I just mentioned, and most dreams, particularly the ones that you either dream them more than once in one dream, or you dream several nights in succession, those are the kinds that you're supposed to look up in a dream dictionary to make subtle adjustments to your personality. It's Creator giving you a nudge saying, hey, you ought to take a look at this, you know, part of your personality. And then, you know, I think about half of dreams are just your mind, you know, wandering and frustration dreams. But repetitive dreams need to be looked at. The Creator's trying to tell you something. That's what I've been taught.
Right, and isn't it, you know what, I just find it really, really awesome, I guess is a really good word, that there's so much communication, you know, and I think that, you know, obviously people are, you know, receive communication or messages in many different ways, you know, so, you know, I may be open to the animals, you know, you may be open, you know, to the animals also, but also receiving communication in the dream state. You know, there's many different ways that people can receive divine communication. And up until the past couple of years, when I really started, you know, I think opening my spiritual heart, you know, and really, you know, kind of walking down my spiritual path, you know, I never really thought that way. And I think, you know, a great many people don't realize that, you know, that they're divine beings also, and that they can be open to receiving communication in many different forms, you know, whether it's through the natural world and the animals, or as you're describing in the dream, you know, in the dream space, or other ways, you know, it's.
Well, you know, for, you know, 1600 years, you know, a billion people have been conditioned to believe certain things, and depending on what traditions you were brought up in, but you know, people talk about, you know, Judeo-Christian, but you know, on the face of it, Christianity really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Judeo part of it, because they don't look toward the Hebrews for much advice, and they really ought to. And it's what I think is really sad is a lot of the Christian denominations are fear based, and they teach that certain things are to be viewed as pagan or evil or witchcraft or whatever. And if they only understood, you know, that Christianity, as it's constituted, is about 80% paganism mixed with about 20% of Hebrew beliefs. But you can't tell that to people. The Old Testament that they got is half of the story, because the Hebrews had an oral part of their tradition that was never written down. And the translations of the New Testament are so screwed up. You know, you've got Paul, you know, just contradicting God, contradicting Jesus, contradicting the other apostles, and the translations were just horrible. The founding fathers, they were, you know, particularly Jefferson and Franklin, they really looked at the New Testament as a real mess. Doesn't mean that they didn't believe in God. They just didn't. Well, it's like Ben Franklin used to say, you know, believe half of what you see and nothing of what you read. And you know, good advice. But you know, since the 60s, you know, this dawning of the age of Aquarius thing, you know, is began to change things. And the prophecy of that the native people had, that the grandchildren of the yellow hair Custer would begin to come, you know, back to particularly after, you know, the movie Billy Jack in the mid-70s.
That was one of my favorite movies growing up, actually.
Right. And, you know, in that movie, a lot of people don't realize that the ghost dance that was shown in that movie was exactly as Jesus taught it to the Indians at Walker Lake, Nevada in 1890. And it was Andy Vidovich was Wovoka's grandson, and it was exactly as it was taught. And you can go to originalghostdance.com, and you can see a clip of the movie that kind of explains what it's all about. Rolling Thunder was in that movie. He was in two of the Billy Jack movies. He was on the cast, and was an advisor to the movie. And Tom Laughlin, I guess, is in his 80s now, and he's a really interesting character. He became the only person in California certified in Jungian psychology that is not a physician. He's a real interesting guy.
I actually just rewatched Billy Jack just a couple months ago with one of my kids because I enjoyed it so much from the 70s. I'm like, you know, you need to, we need to see this movie because it really just is just a great movie. It is. It was just, I remember being in the theaters in the 70s and, you know, the movie getting, you know, standing ovations and stuff. It was just so, so powerful, you know.
Well, before Billy Jack, you know, the business model for Billy Jack, you know, it was the first blockbuster, the way Tom Laughlin rolled it out. But before Billy Jack, you know, they would roll, you know, they would show a movie here and a movie there. They didn't simultaneously release movies all over the country like. But ever since Billy Jack, That business model that he invented has been used for every blockbuster movie that's ever come down the pike. But what the Billy Jack movie that most people didn't see, and you might catch once in a while, called Billy Jack Goes to Washington. It really touched a nerve because Tom Laughlin. Lucy and Desi Arnaz were real good friends of Tom Laughlin, and the first airing of that movie after it was produced that talked about all of the corruption that happens in Washington, D.C., there was a U.S. congressman in the audience, and he became so enraged, he got up in the middle of the film and said, that movie will never be seen in movie theaters. Made threats against Billy Jack, turned over furniture on the way out. He actually drove through the electric gate before it fully opened, leaving the property. He was that mad. He was that angry about what was being outed about just how crooked things are in D.C. But,
and that was in the 70s, right?
Yeah, I think it came out about 78, nine, something like that. And it was made after, you know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which was made back in the 40s, I guess, with Jimmy Stewart. But it was along the same idea. It was very true.
Right.
And we're watching, you know, 30 more years down the road. We're watching what's going on. Wondering what's going to happen next.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's. I don't know. I haven't watched the default clock lately. I don't know how many days we are to default. You know, default if they don't, you know, do something. Unless they've done something today, and I haven't seen the news. But as far as I know, you know, we're still in a stalemate. So.
Well, China.
But, you know.
I heard. There are certain historical mileposts that were passed, like during the Weimar Republic, and every republic. Well, number one, no republics ever lasted more than about 250 years. Democracies last about 50, but every republic that's ever been in existence has gone past five certain mileposts before they go into hyperinflation. And it was suggested about a year ago that if China ever started saying that the world should get off of something other than the U.S. dollar, you know, for the international currency. And the only thing that I was interested in inheriting from my grandfather was a picture frame full of all kinds of different currencies, and one of them was a hyperinflation currency, you know, from the 1920s and 30s. And most people don't remember these things because they don't study history, and everybody knows something's wrong in the world, and they're looking for somebody to lead us out of the mess. And then when somebody comes along and starts talking about hope and change, which is exactly what Fidel Castro did, you know, Senator Cruz has been you know, making a big stink and is very unpopular in the Senate right now. But his dad, you know, he went along with and fought for Castro, ended up getting thrown into prison and escaped and came to the United States. And he just said, you know, hey, what's going on, you know, right now? You know, Obama was saying the exact same playbook that Castro used in the late 50s to lead Cuba into the mess that they're in. So anyway, I'll get away from politics.
Well, you know, if we wanted to go back just to the message of, you know, connection, and, you know, you were speaking about, you know, the Christian-based religions, and the, you know, the a lot of the connections to the natural world that's been lost, you know, in the translation or the writing down of the, you know, mm-hmm. especially in the New Testament. You know, something that I've been thinking about recently, and, you know, I think it's interesting because I think a lot of what we I was raised Roman Catholic, so, you know, I have a, you know, somewhat of a familiarity with the Old and the New Testament, you know, not by any mm-hmm. way a biblical scholar at all, but there's a lot of different things that is in, you know, the teachings are in the Bible if you look at it with a different lens. And I think the problem is that, you know, we've been taught or we've been told to interpret it or look at it a certain way. Like, mm-hmm. for example, you know, one of Jesus's teachings, you know, one of his famous teachings is, you know, that you do to the least of my brothers, you do unto me. And I, you know, I was raised with that, and I used to think that just meant, oh, I was supposed to, you know, be a good girl. I was supposed to, you know, treat other people right because that's what Jesus would want me to, you know, because then I wouldn't be hurting Jesus, let's say. And what I realized, you know, recently is, you know, what Jesus was really saying and what the teaching I believe is really saying is that, you know, what you do unto others, you're doing unto me, because we are really all one spirit. You know, we really, you know, what I'm doing affects you because we're connected, you know, spiritually. You know, we are one spirit. And I believe that's what he was always trying to say. And that connection extends not only from me to you and to all other people, but it, you know, it connects obviously to the natural world and the animals and so forth. And, you know, and I think that teaching, you know, is right there in front of us in the Bible. We're just not looking at it or, you know, understanding it in the context that, you know, it was expressed. And I think that's, you know, where we, you know, it's a huge disservice, I think, you know, to people today, because I think things could be a whole lot easier and people could you know, I think people are having so many problems and they're feeling such anger or such discontent or such worry or such stress because they're really feeling that dislocation from their own spirit and from the spirit of everyone else. And I think that is so unfortunate. You know, so if the teachings of the Native people, you know, we could really embrace more today, you know, that teachings of connection, you know, the teachings of the one, you know, that there is one spirit, it would be a different world.
Well, you're not kidding. I know the Catholic Church has really gone through some changes. Pope John Paul the second, their mother was a Jew, and the Orthodox rabbis in Jerusalem recognized him as a Jew. And during his time, he said, you know, we don't need to missionize Jews. They've got their own perfectly valid covenant. And he began to bring rabbis into Catholic schools. recognizing that there was a wall, you know, a little short wall between, you know, the two faiths, but you know, there's a scripture that I think it's, where is it? Jeremiah, I think it talks about, it says that in the last days, 10 men, you know, talking about the ten lost tribes of Israel, 10 men would grab hold of the fringes or the corners of a Jew, saying, let us go with you because we know that you could teach us about God. And you know, they've got a lot longer tradition, and they understand very deeply and in more depth, you know, what the Bible's all about. And and you know, like I said, the you know, for instance, I point out to my Mormon friends, you know, my Mormon friends, a lot of them like to talk about, well, they always talk about, well, you got to keep the commandments, and they talk about, you know, we want to be translated, we want to be like Enoch society. But if you tell them, well, Enoch society that was supposedly translated, they only had 6 commandments that they lived by, and there was only 6 commandments that were given from Adam down into Moses. And Moses' time, he was given a 7th commandment to create courts of justice to enforce the first 6. And just those 6 commandments, which are similar to but not exactly like the 10 commandments, allowed a society to perfect itself enough to actually be merit being taken off of this world to a better place. And Jews and Arabs, the laws of Noah are universal, and every culture, whether they're indigenous culture or Christian or Muslim, whatever, they all remember a universal flood. And Jesus, in the 24th chapter of Matthew, he says in the last days, he says it will be like unto the days of Noah. And Mark, tell her about you know, that Mayan glyph that you know, the pouring out of water, you know, indicating you know, what might happen. And let me preface that with, you know, most Christians, if you bring this up, they'll say, oh, God says in the Bible he'll never use flood again. You know, well, actually what it says is he'll never again use flood to destroy all life on earth. But he used flood to take care of Pharaoh and his armies. But, yeah, Mark, tell her about that Mayan glyph. You know, while we're talking about the Age of Aquarius.
Well, it's commonly, if you look at some of their artwork, you'll see the two hero twins there, and one of them you'll see him, Sablanki, he's carrying a water jug, pouring it, and that water jug actually has the Akbal symbol, which is the symbol of the cave. Actually goes back to that when I did her birth reading earlier, that symbol's on connected back to her birth. So it's kind of going full circle here.
Right, wow.
I suspect that in the bats, even the owls, because some of the owls actually burrow into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they're almost like in their own little cave. And so the caves, and often if you go down there, a lot of the Mayan caves will have water, you know, under. There will be underground springs and little rivers or streams or something. So very common for whenever you see one of their temple complexes, very common to find caves there and water that goes with the caves. It kind of serves a purpose, though, because if you have a flood or all kinds of earth changes and stuff, at some point, you know, even in the Hopi story and other people's stories, you know, they go underground. They go to the caves. So if you, you know, if you have caves, there's a lot of different types of protection that can be offered to you, and a lot of different events that could all unfold. Caves could actually be a pretty good place to be, especially if you have a water supply there. So, but the idea of the water and the waters being poured out has to do with, it's also kind of a, sort of a purification process, too. I hope you bring up that word, the day of purification.
Mm-hmm.
And water is, tends to be a symbol of purification, you know, cleaning things off. And so we could see that happening very easily again. I know Blue Otter mentioned the thing about Pope John Paul II and folded Germany. I think it was around, 1984 or something, folded Germany. He was talking to a group of traditional Catholics when he told them, well, you know, if there was something, a message, because they asked him about the third secret, and he said, well, if there was a message that kind of talked about, you know, the oceans overflowing on the land and millions of people perishing from one moment to the next, you know, well, remember, along with this knowledge comes the responsibility of knowing about it.
And their mystic said that it would have to do with something with a mysterious star. And that's the same thing that the Hopi said. It's all the stories on the front page of prophecykeepers.com. You can read it. Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
No, so now the there's a little bit of an extra tidbit, and that is that back in about 1963-64, there was something published in Europe, and it's believed now that they actually published part of the, or part, if not all, of the third secret interdispersed amongst other lines of text. And it also talks about this thing about water and oceans overflowing on the land, but it adds another little tidbit. It suggests that the oceans are vapors or maybe steam, or so it may be a little bit more than just some water. And of course, hot water has a tendency to purify a little bit better. So we may, we could be seeing something like that. And this is coming up amongst all kinds of people. I mean, I know here back around 2000 or something, there's a powwow up north of Denver, and some of the natives there, one older lady, she said she had a vision, and there was water coming all the way up to the foot of the Rocky Mountains. And many people, I think, have had, you know, different kinds of visions or dreams or things relating, you know, back to water and flooding. I think that there's going to be probably a little bit more to it than just some water, though.
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh no, are you finished? I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go
you.
Ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking though, you know, a couple of different things. You know, I'd like to raise as discussion points, and one of them is, you know, a lot of the conversation has to do with, you know, something happening like to us or something happening to the earth, you know, to seeming as if it's a power that's an outside type power, you know, whether it's God, you know, in, let's say in some of the scriptures, you know, doing, like you said, God will never, you know, flood the earth completely again. And you know, my belief is that, you know, if we believe that we're divine beings and we believe that we're connected to Source, and if we believe that we have power as, you know, spiritual beings, that I believe that we manifest our own reality. So, you know, my one thought or my thoughts, I can create or manifest, you know, almost anything that I want, right? Because I'm a spiritual being. Collectively, as a human consciousness, you know, I believe that we manifest or create our own, you know, whatever is ultimately going to happen to us. So if there's, you know, it's almost like if you, you know, talk about like the power of prayer or something, like why does prayer work? You know, it's the focused intention of, you know, your spiritual thoughts, right, which can help create something. So I guess what I'd like to just throw out there is that I'm not disagreeing that I believe any of the prophecies may come true. I am not in a position that I could speak about that, you know, anyway. But I would like to just throw out that I believe if the prophecies or what does ultimately happen to, you know, human race and the earth is really more a result of the collective consciousness, you know, that we're manifesting as spiritual beings, not necessarily an outside divine source or God that's doing it to us.
Yeah, that kind of really fits in line, you know, if you listen to what the elders and the Hopi and different ones say. They say that this is a kind of a joint deal. Their way of saying it is that we follow the plan and the general guidelines of the Creator. And we more or less, you know, can do things different ways and this and that, but and we can pretty much do what we want. But if we get out of line and we stray too far where things are just going amiss and just it's turning into a mess, then the Creator reserves the right to have our unbalance be balanced. And so I think
so
we're sort of all saying the same thing.
So what you're saying, Mark, is that so if I say that the collective human consciousness or the spiritual consciousness of the human race is creating our reality, right? So if we're talking about a shift that could be happening for good or bad in this world, the shift or the shift in consciousness, you know, blew out of, you mentioned the age of Aquarius, right? When this, you know, shifting or this higher consciousness was starting back in the 60s. Well, that's the spiritual consciousness of the human race, right? So we're either shifting towards something better or we're manifesting or collectively creating something that's not better. But what you're saying, Mark, is in addition to all of that, that if we just really get so far out of balance that the divine, I think you used the words, reserves the right to bring us back into balance, so there's another force that overrides the spiritual collectiveness of all of us?
Well, some of the another way of saying it is that some of the Hopi elders said that there, and we see the same thing happening in the book of Matthew, is that they say that there are people that are walking around, they're eating, they're drinking, they're dancing, but they're dead. I mean, so you can get to the point where you have people in such a state that there's really not much left. And in creation, we're allowed a lot of latitude. We can do all kinds of things. But we are also responsible when anything that happens, we can have things that we place out of balance come in and be put back into balance. And this is something that the Hopi make a big deal and talk about too, is the concept of balance. And the problem that we have is, let's say that nothing happened, nothing possibly stepped in, if we got going down too far down a path that was really a total disaster for us, well, we could just be gone. So, yeah, I do think that there is, at least according to many of the native stories, and even to an extent in the Bible and many other sources of wisdom across the planet, there is the concept that the Creator in one way or another does reserve the right to balance things that we put out of balance. If we don't do it ourselves.
And that's not just... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Blue Adder.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, we're mortals, but we're also immortal. And, you know, I think there's a recycling project going on here, I mean, if we had, all but, a couple million people killed on the planet, and there would certainly be, if all the means of making war were pretty much destroyed and the grid was brought down, I think we'd have 1,000 years of peace.
Well, the Hindus believe that the earth is, a training ground, that it's, that it's not supposed to be perfect, and as try as we may to make it perfect, that we really can't, because the purpose of this plane that we're in is for experience, that we come here to have experiences. Some people say learn lessons. I like experiences better. Lessons always seem very punitive to me. But that, its imperfection is its purpose, because we can't learn and understand and experience emotions or the duality of emotions unless we're in an imperfect, in an imperfect place. So I believe that we could certainly get really far out of balance, though, as you're speaking about. But I don't believe that the Earth was ever supposed to be the Garden of Eden, maybe specifically either. Going back to a biblical reference. That because of our human form and our ability to make the decisions, like Mark was saying, that and to have our experiences, that we're going to have, a whole range of different things happening.
I don't know whether have you ever heard of the Urantia book?
No, I haven't.
Back in the mid-90s, I read the Urantia book, Urantia, and basically what it posited was that it's a thick book. I mean, it's basically what it said was that the way that creation happened on this planet was unauthorized, and what's going on here is not like any other planet in the system, because what went on here had to do with people coming in from off planet and creating a situation where there were different races, and that because of that situation, that's what set this particular planet up for a series of failures. And the Hopi taught Thomas O. Mills, who ran their he grew up, his mother ran their cultural center for a while. She ran a restaurant in Holbrook, and when they used to come down in the 50s and 60s, she was kind to them, and they didn't go inside the restaurant because they knew they were unwelcome. But when they got federal funding for a cultural center, she was invited to run it, and then Thomas ended up running it. But Thomas basically said, well, the Hopi explained that if you look at the Giza Plateau, that the only symbols that are on the plateau are the same symbols that are important to the Hopi religion. And basically it says that we've got 8 chances to straighten things out in this world and try to reach some sort of balance, or that'll be it. You know, the earth will be destroyed. And the original Hebrew in Genesis, what you're reading is not actually what was taught by Moses. It was taught that this world has been destroyed and remade several times. And you don't believe me, go ask any Orthodox rabbi. They'll tell you the same thing. The earth has been destroyed and remade over several times. This is it's the only thing that will explain why, miles underground in mines, you're finding human artifacts that were in gravels that are like a million years old, like pairs of boots and all kinds of strange anomalies. It's the only thing that would explain strange archaeological, things that you never hear about. And
I'm not discounting or disagreeing with what you're saying. I guess I'm just raising the question of whether or not it's of our own, of our own making, because of our collective consciousness that we're creating, what happens to the earth, or if there's the intervention of a higher power, higher than our collective consciousness.
Well,
when
we interviewed Carlos Barrios, he basically said, he said, this is going to happen. As a Christian, you might think about birth pangs, okay? Birth pangs can be easy, they can be hard, they can last a long time, or they can be very short. And Carlos explained it this way. He said, look, he says, one way or another, this baby is going to be born. It could be hard, it could be easy. And he said, there's nothing was ever written in stone about 2012. He said what he was taught was it could be 15 years either way. And oddly enough, 15 years the other way, past 2012 brings us right up to 2017, which is, if you look at Daniel's timeline, if you go to the page on prophecykeepers.com, that you can listen to this interview later, you can go and watch a 2.5-hour presentation about Daniel's timeline, where they actually take apart the Old Testament and explain the way they did their astronomical viewings, and they explain the 70 weeks. And it says in prophecy that no one knows the day or the hour. What it doesn't say is you won't know the season or the year. Jesus told the Indians at Walker Lake, well, when I come, I'm going to come in the fall. Well, that would make sense, because the Jewish New Year, the Hebrew, Aztec, Mayan, and Cherokee calendars are all based on the Venus cycle. New beginnings always happen in the fall. And I remember back in the early 90s, there was, you were hearing of Mormons all over were having dreams. Well, the oldest Osmond boy told me about a dream that he had, and other people had had, about something just terrible was going to happen during the deer hunt. And the people were all having the same dream, that it was during a period when people were out wearing orange vests and And the only time of year that happens is it's September, October. Well, that's right around Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. That's the Jewish New Year. So, I mean, there's all kinds of hints out there. It's hard to get away from dogma.
Well, one of the things hints be interesting as Patricia about that may have bearing on this too is in recent years I've been seeing more accounts of various white animals being born, like mooses, white buffaloes. I think there was even a white otter.
Oh, wow.
So it'd be interesting why, you know, there's a lot of the different native people said all these animals all of a sudden turning white, that they are speaking to us just by being white, turning albino, or not really albino because they don't have pink eyes or skin, but they're white. So have you looked into that at all, Patricia?
Well, you know, white is a symbol of purity. You know, white is also a symbol of truth. So, you know, I guess we could, you know, we could read a lot into that. I don't know specifically about the, you know, the animals, you know, being born white, but the symbolism of the color white has to do with, you know, purity and truth. So, you know, I we could probably connect the dots, and if what you're saying is about the earth, you know, kind of going through another rebirth, you know, you say it's been, you know, wiped out and recreated many times, you know, it would certainly be in a purer state, you know, then than it is now, right? If we're getting to the point that it's time for the balancing to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that would be too much of a stretch.
Yeah, the Hopis say that the whole problem is the culture of invention. The more and more things are invented, well, you know, and the idea that now we've got corporations that are patenting certain things, and they're going to, you know, one of these days you're going to turn around and find out that somebody's patented the human genome, or that you don't own yourself, or, I mean, it's just crazy that the way things are going and how arrogant people are becoming in about, you know, who can imagine that they own or control what. And just, you know, just how
I think
much.
They said, too, though, that the, one of the core problems, I believe they said, was people trying to force their will upon another. And they said that we cannot fight this battle using that same strategy. So they said the only weapon that we have to fight with is the energy of truth itself.
Well, you know what's really interesting is that, you know, we were talking about metaphors before, and, you know, many people believe that the 2012, and referring to the Mayan calendar that you brought up in the 2012, was the ushering in of the next shift, right? The next solar cycle, ushering in the balancing of the energies, right? So there's a belief that in ancient times, you know, you mentioned paganism and the connection to the earth and the natural world, that the feminine energy cycle was in control. And then, you know, that got out of balance, and the male energy cycle, which is the one that was just finishing up in 2012, and then the balancing of the male and the female is the new shift, the new consciousness that many people believe is happening. So, I mean, would it be too much of a stretch to believe that maybe a lot of the different prophecies that have been foretold is not necessarily a physical rebirthing or wiping out of the earth, but it's the purity or the truth of the higher consciousness, that the human race will actually become more connected. The human race will spiritually elevate, and that will be the rebirth. You know, because that's a belief system that is widely held, that, you know, that it's actually very hopeful going forward because
it'd be nice.
More and more. I think there's a lot to that also, you know, that it's not, it's not the out there source that's going to do something to us because we didn't get it right, but it's our collective consciousness that's going to be elevated and raised. Because if we believe that we're spiritual beings and we believe that we live beyond this life cycle that we're in right now, I'm not saying that the earth will never be destroyed. I'm just, questioning whether it's through, whether what's coming up in the prophecies that you're referring to is actually the physical death of the earth and not a metaphoric death of the state of the earth now and the rebirth into a higher consciousness.
You can't destroy energy anyway. It just, it gets reorganized one way or the other.
I think that they're not talking about a destruction. What they're talking about is it's basically a prophecy, and a prophecy doesn't mean something's guaranteed or supposed to happen. It means that if you don't listen to the warning, the message, then there might be some problems or consequences of not making a change. And I think what's talking about is not a destruction, but a purification, which means cleaning off, because you can get to a point where the people are so, you just basically have a bunch of bodies running around doing something, and they're so spiritually disconnected, they have no clue about the oneness and the creation and the connection between everything. And so they essentially are disconnected. And they're so far disconnected, you know, it's pretty much hard for them to even figure out even how to plug themselves back in.
Right.
And so I think that when that happens, what you start seeing is greed, corruption, wars, and these things start running amok. I mean, it gets way, way out of control to where it becomes very difficult. Even the good people that have some connections and understand this start getting caught up in this mess. And so their perspective is at that point in time, you know, something has to happen. Otherwise, how do you salvage it? And
You get fearful, and you get caught in a snare. And people ask me, "Well, if you know about all this kind of stuff, how come you're not afraid?" And I said, "Well, doesn't scare me. We live forever, and yeah, if you wanna get afraid of it, then fine. But the problem is people at the heads of governments become afraid, and strange things start to happen, and strange rumblings, and you get Congress people talking about, somebody proposed that maybe President Obama should do what Boris Yeltsin did back in the 80s, and where he just rounded up the opposition and put them all in jail. That's not what America's all about. Because go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, it's interesting. Somebody recently told me, actually, he's a teacher of mine, talking about the shift. That's the 2012 shift, and many people believe that many spiritual type portals were opened, in 2012, and that things are accelerating, and that people's levels of consciousness are being raised, much quicker than in any time past. People that want to pay attention, people that want to be aware. And what he told me, which I thought was really interesting, he said, is that that the world is divided in thirds, that a third are dying off because they just can't. They're not at a spiritual level where they can embrace the shift, that they can raise their consciousness. So they're just dying off. A third is kind of fighting a tooth and nail, you know, so they're the ones that, you know, the in-between who maybe are just here, but they're not really paying attention yet. And then the third are walking their spiritual path. They're becoming more spiritually enlightened, awakened, and embracing, you know, the transition, the balance, and the level of higher consciousness. So, again, you know, it's just, it doesn't mean that that's the, you know, the absolute, you know,
sounds
I don't want
like
to say
what?
Bible. I don't want to say Bible, like... but I think it's connecting to what you're also saying, though, right? I mean, when you, you know, you've been talking about, you know, a level of purification and, you know, but I think it has to do more with the spiritual, with the level of spiritual consciousness and what the person is ready for or able to handle at this point in their own spiritual development.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like one religion I know of, the way they explain, you know, that, of course, Jewish people believe that there was a pre-existence, so do Mormons, but they believe that when the war in heaven that began, that's going to come to a head here soon, was that because, you know, one-third of the spirits were in tune, you know, one-third were fence-sitters, and the other third were ready to go along with the rebellion. And so that kind of mirrors what you were talking about. But, you know, Jesus said, I can handle the ones that are hot or cold. He says it's the ones that are lukewarm that, you know, that what are you going to do with the fence sitters? What are you
right.
going to do with a fence sitter? It was easier for him to work with somebody who was either for him or against him, but the ones who didn't care, it wasn't a whole lot you can do with them because they just weren't interested.
Well, you know what's interesting? You know what's really interesting? And, you know, there's just so many connections in the conversation. But, you know, we keep talking about paying attention, right? And, you know, you just mentioned, you know, the fence sitters. You know, we live in such a distracted society. And I think that, you know, in my own personal case and, you know, on my journey, you know, I went through some emotional trauma, and the trauma got my attention, you know, and it wasn't that I was a bad person, and it wasn't that I, you know, I didn't care. I was just distracted with everyday life. I was just, you know, raising my kids and going to work and, you know, paying my bills and doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing and being very distracted. And it wasn't until something caught my attention, you know, like some deep emotional stress over, you know, the breakdown of my marriage, that I really turned inward and I really had to figure out, you know, how I was going to get through it. And that was the beginning of my, you know, kind of my spiritual awakening, let's say, or starting down my spiritual path. So that, like the fence sitters, you know, that you're referring to, they could just be a byproduct of the distracted world that we live in. You know what I mean? And it's part of raising the consciousness or having these conversations like we're having now that, you know, can hopefully catch people's attention. And because I think that people want to feel more connected. I think people want to be, know their spiritual self. You know, I think that... I think we mentioned in the beginning, or I think I mentioned in the beginning, that I believe that many people are, you know, angry and sad and stressed and depressed and, you know, have all sorts of unhappiness around them because of their dislocation from their spirit, you know, their dislocation from their true selves, and they don't feel the connection that they have with each other and with the natural world. So maybe the hope is having the conversations like we're having, and so those fence sitters can, you know, can we can catch the fence sitter's attention, you know, and then they can become,
yeah,
you know, hot or cold.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Along with that, there's a something I told a friend earlier today, and he posted a message to me a little bit a few minutes ago, and he said during the whole day, he said the quote and stuff that I told him, he said that stuck with me all day. It's just been coming up over and over, I guess, and it relates to our conversation because the quote was, "We are all helping each other walk home."
I love that. No, I mean, isn't that really what has to happen? You know, isn't that the connection and the oneness, you know, that we even started the show talking about? You know, that's the, you know, the connection with the animals is an extension of the connection we have with each other. It's just a connection of our own spiritual selves. And we can't do it alone, right? I mean, you know, we have to help each other. And home to me would be home to our own spiritual selves. It's home to our, you know, our collective spirit that we are.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. I think there's an earwig in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Patricia knows what that one is, right? The earwig.
You're good, Mark. You've been reading my blogs. I'm really impressed. You know, for the listeners, I'll just fill them because they might be like, "What is an earwig? You know, why is that?" But I wrote a blog, and it said, "Look, you know, the title is Look Through the Eyes of Oneness," and I tell the story of how my teenage daughter just recently picked up an earwig and, you know, in the morning she was, you know, getting ready for school, and she saw an earwig in her bathroom, and she picked it up, and she, you know, she's very afraid of bugs, but she did it anyway, and she walked it downstairs and let it go outside. And the only reason, and she did that, you know, I'm usually the bug, you know, the one that gets called to bring the bugs outside, the spiders especially, because for some whatever reason, people in my house are afraid of spiders. But she did it because it was alive. You know, there's no other reason. She didn't just squish it or crush it or wrap it up in toilet paper and throw it in the toilet and flush it down the drain. You know, she picked it up and she brought it outside because, simply because it was alive, it has value. You know, and I think that when we can start seeing that connection, we can start seeing that value, we can see that oneness. You know, I think that's, you know, that's the hope for, like we said, that's the hope for the world, that's the hope for all of us going forward, you know, in this plane, is that honoring of all life, you know, whether it's that tiny little earwig bug or it's, you know, I think I said in the blog, you know, the mighty lion, or, you know, the each other is in the human. It's the honoring of the life. It's the honoring of the spirit that runs through all of us that is so important. That's the message of connection and the message of oneness. So Mark, thank you for reading my blogs. That makes me very happy.
Oh, hey, we got a caller. Hey, caller, you got a question?
Hello, hi. No, I was just listening and enjoying all the information.
Well, appreciate you calling in. Somebody called in a while ago, and I wasn't watching. And so area code 901, I apologize. I didn't get you on soon enough. And I thought I'd check with you because some folks call in, and they don't have an Internet connection, so they just call and listen on the phone. You're welcome to do that. But
thank you.
Appreciate
yeah,
you calling
really good
in.
Show.
And, well, we got about 6 minutes left, and if anybody's got anything else to say you know, whatever you want to do, we've got...
Oh, one thing, Blue Otter,
Yeah.
Patricia's birth. Remember, Patricia, I told you a lot of people had a connection with Blue Otter's birth, Nynaeke?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're not an exception.
Oh, I have a connection also?
Well,
yeah.
I've got a connection with... It's not that you're connected to me, is that we're connected with Quetzalcoatl, it seems.
The cycle he was born in, your birth happens on, his is on the ninth day of that cycle, and your birth is also in that same cycle. It's also sitting next to something that's relating, has a connection to a cave. So you might want to look at the Teotihuacan in Mexico, at the Pyramid of the Sun and the cave that is sitting right underneath it. You might want to do a little bit of research or learn about that a little bit, or meditate or whatever you want to do. That may...
Mark, can you spell the name for me, please, so I can make sure?
It's
T-E-O. Oh, that's a good question. I can't usually do it unless I look at it. Let me see. T-E-O.
Okay.
T-I-H-U-A-C-A-N.
Okay. Okay.
Pyramid of the Sun, and there's a cave there. So since the cave came up for me and bats and owls and caves and all that, then that the information, you have to dig a little bit, but that might be, and maybe just do prayer or see what your owl totem or whatever comes up and for you. Might share some information with you about that particular location.
Well, they say that if you set your intention before you go to sleep, you know, if you ask, right? Ask
yep.
and you shall receive,
yeah.
right? So I will ask, I will set the intention to receive a message on that before I go to sleep tonight, and I believe I very well may. That's really, really interesting. I thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's close. It's connected to that unity of your zero point between the worlds, and that particular cave underneath there also has something to do with that.
Okay. Wow, that's so interesting. Oh, I
won't say much more than that because I don't want to plant too many things in your head. I want it to come from the other, from yourself and your own guidance system.
Okay. Well, you've given me, you know, some things to work with. That's for sure. So, wow, that's just so fascinating. That's so interesting. I think I might be doing research tonight, actually. Also,
yeah,
so,
write a new book. Right, follow up. That's what we're here for. I know. Mark certainly changed my life. He's a catalyst. He's a chemical that anybody who comes in contact with changes.
Wow. Well, that's exciting. Well, you know what? I've learned in my life to embrace change. So, you know, not to be, you know, apathetic or fearful of it in any way. So I'm excited. I'm excited by, you know, the messages you've been giving me tonight, Mark. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope it helps.
Thanks.
Well,
I will let you know.
Yeah, we only got about a minute and a half left of the stream, so we better say our goodbyes.
Okay. Well, you know, Blue Otter and Mark, thank you very, very much. I appreciate, you know, you having me on your show tonight, and I've really enjoyed our discussion. So,
you bet.
And we've done almost about an hour without any animal sounds. So, I don't know.
Well, you didn't mention your book either. You might want to do that real quick.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. My book is called God is in the Little Things, Messages from the Animals, and it's my, you know, it's my true spiritual journey as told through the animals that have visited me acting as animal totems. And listeners can visit my website, godisinthelittlethings.com. There's a lot more information. There's links to order, and there's actually, and my blog is also there that Mark has brought up. So godisinthelittlethings.com.
Well, here's some little, of course, that if you go to prophecykeepers.com, the front page, and click on the link that says, you know, listen to tonight's interview, that information's on there. But, yeah, let's listen to a few here. Here's a butterfly. Believe it or not, that was the sound of a butterfly.
Oh, like a train.
yeah, highly, you know, amplified. Here's a chickadee. And chipmunk.
Sounds like a trail.
Uh-huh. Here's a deer. I think it's a fawn calling for its mom, and man's best friend. Actually, I got that off of YouTube. They've got a thing where they got 12 hours of dog sounds, and when you leave the house, you could just let that play. So anyway, when it comes to the door, is going to hear the back in the 80s, somebody came out with a tape called Benedict Speaks, and it was the sound of a German Shepherd going absolutely ape, you know. And but here's an interesting one. Here's a dragonfly. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And of course, a hummingbird. Oh yeah. Here's a kingfisher. And here's a strange one. This is a koala. Wow, sounds like he's in a bad mood. And here's a mouse. They don't say a whole lot.
they're little. Oh, all those great animal sounds, and we didn't get to much of the symbolism of them, but you know, your listeners, you know, hopefully their interest has been picked, and they can probably look up the symbolism themselves, which is always very fun to do.
Well, they just need to get greedy for your information and just go for it, and of course there's a raccoon, and so it's something that's easily grasped, even in the dark. Even if you live near the seashore.
Well, you know, they say the shore.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. That was a toad.
Oh no, I was just gonna. I was gonna say they say that, you know, the shore is a place of magic. You know, it's where the water and the land meet, and then that is a very, you know, mystical, magical place. So the seagulls you played are pretty great birds. So.
Yeah, I grew up in Santa Monica when I was like second, third, fourth grade. My dad and I were actually out fishing on the coastline one day, and as I cast, you know, the line actually hit a seagull, and I popped the poor thing, snagged it, and that was kind of traumatic for a little guy, and But he trusted me. We got the little, I think I kind of caught him on the side of the neck and had to get some pliers, cut the barbs off and let him go. But anyway, well, we better go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And, yeah, just stay where you are, Patricia, and I'm going to play the outro music, and we'll get together in the green room afterwards.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powell. They're like Gas Mojo. They're very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter. It contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Inside the rainbow, look inside the heart. Let the truth